Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story. And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Is everybody in? The ceremony is about to begin.
And here we go.
Dr. Evil, we have a problem.
That's gonna be cool.
I mean, after all, you're nerds.
They look like a couple of dorks.
Perfect. We couldn't have planned this better.
As of this moment, they're on double secret probation.
What's happening, hot stuff?
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
What? English, do you speak it?
Yes.
Then you know what I'm saying.
Yes.
And welcome, everybody, to the Sports Report, brought to you by sportsaudio.net. I'm Packer Dave. Glad to have you with us today. We've got a good show on tap. We're going to go back in the archives and listen to interviews from Dick Butkus that we had a couple years ago with Steve Leventhal from SRN Broadcasting, and Bart Starr with myself and former Sports Radio Nightly, the late Sports Radio Nightly sports director Bob Greenberg. That'll be coming up in the next segment of the show. Later in the program, we'll talk about the college bowl games coming up. A lot of interesting matchups there. Jeff Rich from the Sports Byline Network will join us for that. But big game in Green Bay. The Packers beat the Vikings in Green Bay last week, and this sets up for the division title the game against the Lions in Detroit this Sunday. Aaron Rodgers last week just on fire. 4 passing touchdowns, 1 rushing touchdown. Jordy Nelson gets another 2 touchdowns. He's at 14 TDs for the season. He had over 154 yards in the game. And what a collapse for the Vikings. After starting 5-0, they end 7, and they're at 7-8 right now. And they have a meaningless game against the Bears in Minnesota this week. The Bears get trounced by Washington last week. You thought maybe going into that game, Bears might have a chance. They were looking pretty good the previous few weeks. Came up a little short, but Washington really stuck it to them. And the Redskins, they need a win at home against the Giants this week and some help if they have any playoff aspirations to come true. So a lot happening last week, setting up some good scenarios for this week. A lot of great playoff scenarios coming up. And congratulations to the Cleveland Browns. They get a win over the San Diego Chargers. Chargers had a field goal attempt at the end of the game to tie it and put it into overtime, but it didn't go through, and Cleveland gets a win. What will happen with the Chargers now? Could the San Diego-Kansas City game in San Diego this coming weekend be the last game in San Diego for the Chargers? We'll have to wait and see, but a lot of great action in the NFL this weekend. So hang on for these great interviews coming up with Bart Starr, Dick Butkus, and then Jeff Rich on college football later in the show. Stay with us on the Sports Report, brought to you by sportsaudio.net.
A cozy fire can really set the mood, but don't let that mood turn sour. I'm Danny Lipford with tips for today's homeowner. Stay tuned and we'll look at your choices for fireplace fuel right after this.
The kitchen is often the center of entertainment in the home, but it's also one of the main sources of pollutants. That's why it's important to ventilate your kitchen properly. Make sure to use your kitchen range hood every time you cook and to keep the hood on for at least 10 minutes after you've finished cooking. Many Barone range hoods feature an automatic delay timer, which can help you accomplish your ventilation hands-free. You can learn even more at Barone.com. Barone New Tone, bringing fresh ideas home.
Whether you're looking for supplemental heat or maybe a touch of romance to your evening, a roaring fire is definitely a great choice. But if you burn the wrong type of wood, your best intentions will quickly go up in smoke. When choosing wood for a fireplace, the key word is seasoned. That means, in the most basic sense, that you don't want to use firewood from a tree that you just cut down because there's still too much moisture in the logs. Softwood reaches good seasoning in 6 to 12 months, while hardwood takes a bit longer. Lumber scraps are also often used, but don't ever use lumber that's been pressure treated because it can release volatile chemicals into your rooms. Finally, always make sure to open the damper before lighting any fire to make sure the smoke goes outside where it belongs. I'm Danny Lipford with tips for today's homeowner.
The Year in Sports, a presentation of CRLRadio.com. I'm Bob Terrell. Join us in 1985 on The Year in Sports. Stanford University was the scene of Super Bowl XIX, hyped as the battle between two great quarterbacks. Ultimately, Joe Montana would lead the 49ers to victory over Dan Marino and the Dolphins 30-16. In basketball, Brett Musburger, Dick Stockton, and Tom Heinsohn grabbed the mics for CBS's coverage of the NBA championship. The Lakers defeated the Celtics 4-2 to defeat the Celtics for the first time in Laker history in the NBA Finals. The 1985 World Series, known as the Show Me Series because both teams are in Missouri, saw the Kansas City Royals beating out the St. Louis Cards 4-3. In hockey, this Stanley Cup was the first to feature two Canadian teams since 1967. The Montreal Canadiens defeated the Calgary Flames 4-1 in the final series to win the Stanley Cup. I'm Bob Terrell. Thanks for joining us in 1985 on The Year in Sports, a presentation of CRLRadio.com.
Merry New Year!
Happy New Year. In this country, we say Happy New Year.
Ha 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 ha! Thank you for correcting my English, which stinks.
Hey, Packer Davis, this is Nicky V, man. I'll tell you one thing. You're not all Rolls Royce. You're not a PT Beard. They tell me you're Brick City, USA. You can't shoot the J, baby. You better stay with the pigskin.
I am sticking with the pigskin, but happy New Year to you, Dicky V. I am Packer Dave. Now I bring in Steve Leventhal from SRN Broadcasting in Chicago. Happy New Year, or let's just say the eve of New Year.
Merry New Year.
To you, Steve, okay? And this is going to be one of those best of shows. You know, going to take some clips and some interviews from great sports figures from the past. And a few years ago, you caught up with Dick Butkus, right, Steve?
We did.
All right. And where was that, by the way?
I believe it was at the Western Open, and he was one of the celebrities playing there.
You believe it was? You were there, right?
Well, you know, the memory just isn't what it used to be.
Okay. Well, drafted by the Bears in 1965, and one of the most durable linebackers of all time, played for the Fighting Illini, University of Illinois, enshrined in the Pro Football Hall
Say
of
that
Fame.
Again.
Enshrined in the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1979. 9 seasons for the Bears, and at the end of his career, he had knee problems, but he really didn't play on a lot of winning teams for the Bears. Well, basically, most Bears players never play on any winning teams. But, you know, that's beside the point.
Think he had a few concussions in his day?
Maybe. I think he caused a lot. But anyway,
sure.
Steve, let's hear this one from a couple years ago. Dick Butkus, linebacker for the Bears, right here on the Sports Report.
We're visiting today with one of the great linebackers in NFL history, Dick Butkus. You played right here in Wrigley Field back in 65 to 70. What was that like?
Well, for me, it was really pro football because, to me, when you looked at the history of pro football where they play these games in, like, prairies and everywhere else, you know, nothing was – it was wherever you can get 100 yards, you play football, and that was professional. And that's why I felt here because – you know, the south end zone, they had, I think, 2x6 planks covering the corner of the dugout, the visitor's dugout over there, and that was part of the end zone. And then when you go to the north end, it was almost like the end of the end zone was like right where the warning path starts back there in the outfield. So it was close, you know, close confines to the fans, which were great, and the poor visitors would have to go through the visitor's locker room and they just had a cyclone fence where they had to go upstairs to their locker room. And, of course, the Bear fans would, you know, shower them with whatever as they walked by. So I just thought it was a great, you know, this was the essence of being in the pros. You play under any conditions, wherever. And, you know, because that field really had a slope from, like, the pitcher's mound all the way out to left field. And we actually practiced here, you know, all week before the games. And as the weather turned, I mean, we would just tear up all the grass, so there was really no grass, and then it would die off if we had a cold spell, and they'd have to paint the field on Saturdays to make it at least look green. So I just thought it was great.
Played with the likes of Gale Sayers, Mike Ditka. What were some of the camaraderie back then with some of those great players?
Well, I played against Gale in a couple of All-Star games, and of course in practice, and I still say it to this day, he was probably one of the best backs I've ever faced. And a lot of people say, you played with you. How can you say that? But I saw enough of him in practice and things like that that no one else ever duplicated in games. So that's why I say I think he was one of the best. Then I remember Mike, the first exhibition game, there was always talk about the spirit or the team unity spirit of pro football wasn't as great as college, and that was quickly dispelled because I remember the first game we played in the Liberty Bowl in Nashville, and I think it was one of the first games, and there was Mike with the other captains by the door, and it was an exhibition game, and he was yelling and getting everybody going, and I thought, hey, this is the real thing here. This is great. So a lot of misconceptions about this unity and spirit of college and pro. I tell you, pro doesn't take a seat to anybody as far as unity and spirit. At least it wasn't that way back when I was playing. Now they're changing teams so often, I don't know where their loyalty is.
Yeah, and if you think about the old days, there were no seat warmers, there were no hand warmers, no docs on the sidelines. You know, when you got hurt, what happened?
When you got hurt, you just, that's you just play like you didn't get hurt because, it just seemed back then, if you got hurt or whatever on the field, you just took whatever it took to get off the field. You didn't want to give the opponent team any pleasure in seeing that, I'm injured. You did this to me. Unlike today where if they have a hangnail, they're down, they got their face buried in the AstroTurf. And to me, it's like when everybody, all the pull motor and all the emergency people come running out there to help this guy, it's like, hey, is the TV camera on? Okay, I can get up now, take the helmet off and run off and smile. Back in our days, if you would have done that, I mean, you would have been chastised. It's just, you don't let or give anybody the satisfaction that, hey, you might have hurt me. I'm going to get off the field no matter what.
Nor did they have the rules to protect the quarterbacks and the wide receivers. And everybody was fair game, weren't they?
Yeah, pretty much so. That's what I think when people ask what's changed about the game. Everybody right away says, oh, it's the money. Well, I don't know about that. It probably has some effect on the players. But really, it's the rules on defense. A receiver, you can hit them anywhere that they ran routes anywhere. You can hit them as long as the ball wasn't thrown. And now you only got 5 yards. And so, to me, it's... they're handcuffing the defense. The offensive linemen it becomes a shoving match, which gives them a little advantage, to help them on the pass rush and things like that. So when I was playing, it just seemed like every year there'd be rule changes. And if one rule was changed for defense and maybe the offense didn't score as much as they'd like, boom, they'd take away a rule from the defense and vice versa. And they were actually trying to make it even. I think now with the exposure of the game and everything else, they really want to see high-scoring games, I would think, because with all the rule changes, it seems like for every rule change, 3 of them are for the offense, favor the offense, and 1, is for the defense. So, but I guess that's what they want.
So who were some of the quarterbacks that you played against that you would tip your cap, say, boy, that guy was great?
Well, we had one right in our division. Bart Starr was great, and that was during their winning years. John Unitas. We had Fran Tarkington when he was scrambling around, playing well. John Brody was playing out there in San Francisco, and Gabriel. I mean, I think on a whole, if you look back, I mean, during that 65 to 75, there were a lot of good quarterbacks. Sonny Jurgensen, there were a lot of them around. Now it just seems like if you don't have, a really good one, you can write your team off.
How would Peyton Manning have fared in your day?
Oh, I think he'd do fine because, he works at the game. I mean, he has the ability, but he has it upstairs, too. It just depends on who he's with. His poor dad was crucified with the team he had to play with. So you really don't know how good he could have been. But with Peyton, I think he could have played in any era just because he works at the game.
What are some of your best recollections of the Bear-Packer rivalry?
Well, it starts off the week before the Packers, when we used to practice here. Doug Atkins used to joke around with Coach Hallis and say, you know, Coach, I think I thought I saw some reflection of binoculars over there on Waveland Avenue in an apartment over there. And the old man would get one of the assistants and run over there and check it out. And it would only happen during Packer week, you know, because they – I guess we had our spies, and the old man was really leery about spying on us. And but it was in my era, it was great because I had met Nitschke when I was a sophomore through my brother at Illinois, and so you know everybody thought we were you know against each other, but actually he was a good friend, and he was actually a guy I looked up to for many years. And they were good. They were a good team, you know, and we weren't so good after a 65 year. Almost made the playoffs, but it just always seemed that when you play against the Packers, you know, it was the rivalry, and even though we weren't that good, let's say, we always gave them a good game, you know, and that's what I liked about it. Here you're playing, and I was young, first 3 or 4 years, you know, here we're playing some, you know, former world champions, and, you know, it's kind of a measuring stick. If our team wasn't winning very much, well, how do you measure if you're doing well enough? And well, so you got to take personal pride and see how well you can play against the best. And that's what I tried to do. And it was fun. It was, you know, they were good. They would tell you, I mean, literally tell you what their formations, where they're going to go, and they just challenge you to stop them. But they were so well-defined that they really executed, and that's what killed everybody.
Well, thinking back, you mentioned Coach Hallis. What was special about Coach Hallis?
Well, the thing special about him, I thought, was that he was the owner and your coach. And, you know, if you wanted to smart off, you're smarting off with the guy who pays you, unlike a regular coach that, you know, he's just your coach. He's not the general manager, and you don't have to worry about him cutting your salary or whatever. He was the man we had to talk to. And I know when Gal and I came aboard in the 65, we were the only two guys that dealt with him, and he would never let me use, you know, a representative. Although you could call your guy after you talked to him, but you use his phone. The thing was probably tapped in the first place, and then he would just say, you know, no one's here to watch you or whatever. They're here to watch Gail. And then I talked to Gail, and he said the same thing to me. He says they're not here to watch you, Gail. They're here to. So he was always, you know, and I just. Being, you know, a buff of history and my love of the sport, I mean, what better situation to play for the guy who practically started the game, started pro football? So people can say whatever they want about him being cheap or whatever. I just really like playing for him. He was the man, and it's just a shame that he let it slide a little bit too long before he made some changes because I think they made a big mistake by letting George Allen go. I think if he would allow George to come and be the head guy, I think they had enough personnel, and with George's ability to trade and get people to play for him, I think they would have had, you know, a few more championships.
What was your top salary plan?
I think it was 100, maybe 100, 102 or something like that. And that was at the very end, and I had a fight to get that.
Well, if Lance Briggs is worth $7 million, yeah, and Ray Lewis is worth $9 million, what would you have been worth, 10, 12?
I don't know. Playing here, I don't know. But, you know, Bears, I guess, they opened up their strings for Harris, I guess. So it was just, that was the way it is. You know, it really wasn't a big issue because we all had side jobs. We all, you know, after practice, we had other jobs.
What was your job?
Well, 1 year I worked for Wanzer Dairy. The you know, Wanzer milk is sterling on silver, and then I worked for a Bork Pontiac out there in Chicago Heights. I worked for 1 year for Bennett Industries out in Piatone, selling pails, plastic pails. And so everybody seemed to have something else to do, and wasn't really, you know, I mean, it wasn't brought up as much. Of course, we'd always say that, you know, Hallis was cheap and all that, but that was just, it was fun playing for him because, you know, he'd come up with stuff and, you know, hey, coach, you know, what about this? You know, I thought we just want to get some extra money for this. And he says, yeah, well, I lied, you know, goodbye. You know, just goofy things like that, he'd say. And everybody, oh, okay.
That's Steve Leventhal with Dick Butkus, linebacker for the Bears from 1965 to 1972, right here on the Sports Report. I'm Packer Dave. When you talk about Packer greats from the 1960s, you have to include Bart Starr and the late Bob Greenberg, who was the sports director for SRN Broadcasting back in the 90s. And I, on the previous show, the Bears-Packer Showdown, interviewed Bart Starr. He played for the Packers from the late 50s until 1972, was a 17th round draft choice for the Packers, and turned out to have a stellar career with 5 championships with Green Bay. Here he is with Bob Greenberg from 1998. That's why you'll hear them say 31 years ago was the Ice Bowl, but it's actually now 49 years ago. Here's Bart Starr with myself and Bob Greenberg.
It was 31 years ago last week that Bart and the Green Bay Packers won the famous Ice Bowl. Bart, welcome to the Bears-Packers Showdown.
Thank you, Bob. Great to be with you.
Bart, first of all, what are your memories of the Ice Bowl? What was it like to play in that very cold weather that suddenly changed the night before?
I'm glad you started with the night before, because that's where I would like to begin. It was interesting on our pregame workouts on Saturday. The day actually was cold, probably around zero or maybe a little above, but there was no wind, and it felt like it was in the 30s, and I'm not exaggerating. And you, all of us know the rest of it. It began to change after that and became very cold overnight and then never recovered much the next day.
Well, what was it like to play in that cold weather for both you and the Packers and the Cowboys?
It was extremely tough. I recall a person, I believe it was a media person, saying something to Max McGee before the game about how tough it was going to be on the Cowboys. He said, yes, it is. But he said, I have news for you. This is going to be tough on everyone. And it was. It was just a very brutal day.
But I want to talk about the final drive in the Ice Bowl and the winning touchdown.
It was a very meaningful experience for all of us. We knew that it was literally do or die at that point. The Cowboys had come back to go ahead in the game. And when we went into the huddle for that final drive and looking into the eyes of the linemen, there was no need to make any comment other than just call the play and get after it, because everyone was intense. They were ready to go and perform, and that's exactly what happened. It was truly a team performance during and throughout that drive, and every person literally contributed, and as a result we were able to score.
Well, of course, you got over the top on that one.
Well, sort of under the bottom. I guess would be a better way, because we were able to push far enough into the end zone to sneak in behind a couple of great blockers.
Bart, describe your arrival to the Packers in the 1950s.
It was a very interesting experience. I came there with very little resume. I was injured my final 2 years of college, and so I was thrilled to be drafted at all. I had worked extremely hard during the summer prior to going to training camp, felt very prepared, but just simply hoped I would get a chance to display the talent that I had in order to be able to make the football team. I was granted an opportunity to do so, and made the team, and was just thrilled. I had followed the Packers for years and the Bears. The Bears were televised in Alabama for years, and I was a big Bears and Packer fan, and so when I was drafted by them, I was extremely elated. When Coach Lombardi came to the Packers, and looking at who had been there and what performances we had pulled off, I'm sure he wasn't very impressed, and so he had traded to the then Chicago Cardinals for Lamar McCann, and I backed him up the first year he was there, and then when he was injured, I had a chance to play.
Now, Bart, what about that great Bears-Packer rivalry?
I don't know that there are people out there who can really appreciate it unless they've been following it for years and have been very close to it, and obviously the players and coaches are those who can best appreciate it. It is truly unique, and I felt thrilled to be in the black and blue division, if you will, and to have been able to play against the Bears for so many years, because it was a special game. You prepared for it in a unique way because of the emotion, and it was always a thrill to play regardless of what the score was. And I'll always recall the fun times of playing in Wrigley Field against the Bears. That was quite an environment in those days.
Well, Bart, I wonder if you can talk about what it was like to play for Coach Vince Lombardi. What kind of a guy was he to play for?
I wish your show were longer because we could talk literally for minutes and hours about that. He was a great inspirational leader, outstanding teacher, a person who truly, when standing in front of you or being around you in the, during the course of a day, epitomized what leadership through example was all about. You saw a person standing in front of you every day who truly sought to excel. And then you talk about someone you wanted to emulate. He was it.
Now, your last game you ever played was the first game I ever saw in 1971 against the Dolphins.
Well, I was probably in error for attempting to play the last two or three years of my career. I had a shoulder injury, and when Coach Lombardi retired, I should have been smart enough to retire too. But with Coach Bingson coming in, I continued to play, and in hindsight, it was a mistake. I couldn't play that well, and I remember the Dolphin game as well, and I didn't play very well.
Bart, I have a final question. If you look back on your coaching career at Green Bay, if you had a chance to do it over, what would you do differently now?
I probably would not have accepted the job. I did it out of emotion. It's hard to say no to an organization you have a love affair with, but I had not planned to coach. I was already in business. I was very happy in business. But how do you say no? And I don't know that the one thing I would like to have had was have someone like a Ron Wolf to assist you, which the Packers did not have in those days and unfortunately didn't make the change, although we urged them to do so. Because Ron Wolf, in my opinion, has been a very, very strong contributor to the success of the Packer organization in recent years.
Well, those were some strong offensive teams with Lynn Dickey, James Lofton, John Jefferson, Paul Kaufman, and then a good backfield with Ellis and Ivory. But the defenses in those years kind of limited the Packer wins.
You're right. Yeah, that's a good observance. Well, you are noting some outstanding performers we had there. We just couldn't stop some people. In fact, one of the years that we had our best offensive displays, we simply couldn't stop the other team, and we would have to outscore opponents in order to win. And I can tell you, and you know this well, that's not the way to win the National Football League.
We want to thank you for coming on the program and actually saying that you wished our program was longer. I think you're the first person that ever said that.
Well, I've enjoyed chatting with you guys, and I hope you have a great new year.
All right, you too,
Happy
Bart.
New Year to you, Bart, and good luck to you.
Well, thank you, and good luck to the Bears as well.
We got to see what happens with these Packers getting to the Super Bowl. That's first. It's going to take the Bears a long time to turn it around.
I know it is, but I want them to be strong also because then we have a strong division and have even more competition.
Delayed Sports Radio Nightly Sports Director Bob Greenberg with Packer great quarterback Bart Starr and myself back in 1998. And we'll be back with a lot more. You are listening to the best of the Sports Report, brought to you by sportsaudio.net. We'll be back.
The Year in Sports, a presentation of CRLRadio.com. I'm Bob Terrell. Join us in 1989 on The Year in Sports. The San Francisco 49ers came off a 17-2 season to go on to the most lopsided game in Super Bowl history to date. The 49ers' 55 points were the most ever scored by one team, and their 45-point margin of victory over the Broncos was the largest ever. The NBA championship was a rematch of the previous year's round between the Detroit Pistons and the LA Lakers. This time, however, it was the Pistons over the Lakers in a four-game sweep. The World Series that year is best remembered as the Earthquake Series. It caused a 10-day disruption in play. It also was the most one-sided contest in the history of the World Series. The Oakland A's led all but two innings of the four-game sweep. San Francisco never had the lead. In Stanley Cup playoff action, the Calgary Flames won an all-Canadian final against the Montreal Canadiens 4-2. I'm Bob Terrell. Thanks for joining us in 1989 on The Year in Sports, a presentation of CRLRadio.com.
If you find yourself with one or more unused rooms in your house, think twice before closing the door. I'm Danny Lipper with tips for today's homeowner. Stay tuned and we'll uncover the myths and the facts about closing off rooms in order to save energy right after this. Windows are a prime spot for energy loss, but you can add a barrier against the winter chill by installing Duck Brand Roll-On Window Kits. Designed with ease in mind, Roll-On Window Kits come with a pre-taped edge for easy application, require no measuring, and fit the window frame for an airtight seal. Also look for Duck Brand's heavy-duty window kits. They're 2 times thicker and more puncture-resistant than standard window kits. Keep warm and save with Duck Brand. Find Duck Brand weatherization products at duckbrand.com. It's not uncommon for people who have an unused room in their home to close off the air vents and shut the door in an effort to conserve energy. It's only natural to think that by eliminating an area to be heated or cooled, you will save money. But the truth of the matter is that in many cases, you'll do more harm than good. Central heating and air systems today are balanced for the homes they service. By shutting off one or more rooms, you throw the system out of balance, causing the unit to cycle on and off more frequently, which costs you more money. So keep the balance in your home and in your heating and cooling system. Keep those doors and vents wide open. I'm Danny Lipford with tips for today's homeowner.
Did you know that the average yearly repair bill for a car 5 years or older is more than $1,200? Having repair coverage for your car just makes sense, but the trick is not to overpay for it. With Toco Warranty, you can get a highly rated vehicle protection plan usually for less than a tank of gas per month. And now, we're offering a zero down payment program. To get a great car vehicle protection plan at a super low price, call Toco Warranty at 1-800-987-3157. That's 1-800-987-3157. Terms and conditions apply.
All I need are some tasty waves, cool buzz, and I'm fine.
Okay, you're back on the Sports Report, brought to you by SportsAudio.net, with myself, Packer Dave, and Steve Leventhal. And now we bring in from Arizona, the Phoenix area, the guy who was partying with Michael Floyd the night that he was nailed with a .22 blowover. Jeff Rich, how are you, Jeff?
You know, I told my man Mike Floyd that he should get some rest. I just thought that he'd go home before he did it.
Why didn't you order him a limo, Jeff? I mean, he's got enough money, and Lord knows you've got a ton of cash. Between the two of you and all your party buddies that were out there that night drinking up a storm in Scottsdale, couldn't you got him a limo, for crying out loud?
The man wanted to drive. What can I tell him? No, you know, in all seriousness, that's not a joking matter. You know, we're out on the roads here in Phoenix, and I hear it's going on in Chicago and all over the place. You got people driving the wrong way on the freeways and getting people hurt. So, you know, I mean, you know, we've got all these great services. We got Uber, we got Lyft, we got the traditional cabs. And, you know, if you're rich like Michael Floyd used to be, then, you know, you can call yourself a limo. So, you know, no excuse for that. And it's sad. And that's why he lost his job here with the Arizona Cardinals.
I feel guilty now that I brought in the segment that way. But, you know, he winds up with the Patriots. He might be participating in a Super Bowl after all of this. That's what's kind of ironic about it. But anyway, Jeff lives in Arizona, so he has followed the Cardinals this year. I live in Arizona part of the year. I, of course, follow the Cardinals. What the heck happened there, Jeff?
What the heck happened with the Arizona Cardinals? I think that Bruce Arians might not be that great coach. I still think he's a good football coach. Just not the great football coach that we might have thought he was. It's tough to get it done with Carson Palmer. I mean, I think that he's a serviceable quarterback. And if you think about back to the Sun Devil Stadium days for the Arizona Cardinals, they got to be pretty happy, even with years like this that they're putting on in Glendale, Arizona. Obviously, a disappointing season, a lot of Super Bowl aspirations going in, especially with the way that it ended with the NFC Championship a year ago. But you know, they just didn't get it done this year. You know, I don't think there's any reason to blow it up. I think that they need to look at developing a quarterback for the future. But when you look to 2017, I don't think that there's any reason to believe that the Arizona Cardinals are down and out. I mean, Seattle's still going to be a tough task ahead, but there's not really a lot of great teams in that NFC. I think it's the Cowboys and everybody else at this point.
Okay, Steve, is this about the Cardinals?
Yes, it is. Absolutely.
Okay, what? Okay,
they got a damn fine running back.
Okay, yes, David Johnson. Of course.
You know, that's kind of the interesting thing, you know, that you bring up David Johnson here, because, you know, everybody's going to talk about Ezekiel Elliott because of the Cowboys' record, but the numbers, other than the wins and losses, I mean, DJ's got it over Zeke all day long, but you know, it's tough when you're playing on a team with a losing record, especially a team with expectations like the Cardinals, for anybody voting for the MVP to look at somebody from that roster, even despite the great numbers that Johnson has put up in his second year out of Northern Iowa.
Okay, and a lot of special team mistakes this year, games they could have won but didn't because of special teams. A lot of drop passes this year. Just seems a lot of mistakes and mental errors for the Cardinals, which is uncharacteristic of a Bruce Arians team. But maybe it was just one of those years, and they pick up next year. It looks like Carson Palmer will be back. Larry Fitzgerald hasn't said anything yet, but I would imagine that he's going to be back. They've got David Johnson. They still have talented players offensively and defensively, so maybe they can get it together. All right, now we're going to look at the big slate of college bowl games coming up. And Steve, I know a lot of these are interest to you, so you start with this one.
Well, I would say the first thing to sort of look at, just in the broad brush strokes, would be, you know, the Final Four, the two games, the Fiesta Bowl and the Peach Bowl. Because before we would look at the matchups, the real question is, does Ohio State, in your opinion, Jeff, deserve to be playing in that game?
I think it's a tough call. I'd go 50-50 on it. I think that they are probably one of the best four teams in the country, given what they did, given that win over Oklahoma. I think that that's the big thing there. You know, losing straight up to Penn State on the road at night, that's somewhat of an excusable loss. You could say the same thing for Michigan's loss to Iowa. I think when you looked at it, I think that the best team in the Big Ten East was going to come out of that Ohio State-Michigan game, and that game was basically a coin flip in and of itself. Say what you will about the officiating, but officially the final score, Ohio State 30, Michigan 27. I think that you look at what Michigan did to Penn State at home. I mean, that's 39 points versus the 7-point fluke that Ohio State lost in State College with. So I think it's arguable. I think that, you know, if the committee says that they're going to put a lot of weight on the conference championship, to take a team from a conference that's not the champion and not take the champion itself, I think that's a tough argument. I think the Penn State has a good argument, but, you know, if they'd have beaten Pittsburgh, I think it'd be a slam dunk that Penn State would be in there rather than Ohio State. And, you know, I mean, they beat Oklahoma, who's a conference champ straight up. They did not beat Penn State, who's a conference champ straight up, but they beat there's four good teams. There's four really good teams in the Big Ten, and Ohio State beat, knocked off Michigan. They knocked off Wisconsin. They lose on a blocked field goal to Penn State. And I just think body of work puts Ohio State, into that top four. So I don't have a problem with it. I wouldn't have had a problem if Penn State would have gotten in over Washington or Ohio State either, though.
Well, you can't. I mean, I guess you could, in theory, have two teams from the same conference in the Final Four. But again, if the whole purpose of, and this is just my opinion, and if the whole purpose of this is to create a national championship through an actual playoff versus handpicking the two teams that are going to make it, then at some point you have to win your conference to get in there. Otherwise, then maybe they need to open it up and make it an 8-team playoff. This way, you can have a quote-unquote at-large team, take the winners of the Big Five power conferences, throw three more teams in there, and now you've got yourself a real playoff. But if that's the case, why are you allowing, you create this scenario, and then you basically break your own rules?
Because there are no rules. There's no set criteria for this. They can make things up as they go along, as they have. I mean, they don't reward the best overall season from game 1 to game 12 or game 13 when you throw that championship in there. They want the teams that are hottest at the time. They want the teams that are going to sell. And, I hate the precedent that exists with Washington. Yes, they won the Pac-12 conference. But you could argue in the case of the Pac-12, and they had three losses, so there's not much of a fight for USC, but USC knocked off Washington. I mean, that was the toughest game they played. Other than that, they knocked off Colorado. They knocked off an Oregon team that's just not the same anymore. I want to see good games in September. I want to reward Ohio State for playing Oklahoma. I want to reward Michigan for playing a Colorado team that ended up being pretty good. I want to reward Wisconsin for playing LSU. I want to reward Clemson for playing Auburn. You know, I'm looking at Washington. They played Portland State, they played Idaho, and they played Rutgers. You know, and if that's the model to get in, nobody's going to play a soul in the month of September if you can get in just by winning an easy conference without playing anybody out of conference.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. And listen, I take it to the extreme. I would say they shouldn't even be playing any of these, you know, Division I AA teams, you know, the Alcorn States and the Louisiana Techs and the Southwest Missouri Valley States. Let's, you know, let's make everybody play a tough schedule. And then you're going to have a real, you know, survival of the fittest. And, you know, USC probably, had they not lost to Utah, they would have been in that championship game. And then who knows how it would have been in a rematch with USC and Washington. They certainly manhandled them the first time they played them.
Yeah, and I think that you're going to look at something like that 52-6 opening game in Arlington between Alabama and USC. I mean, do we pretend like that game didn't happen? I mean, I know that USC is the best team in the Pac-12 in the month of November and December, but they obviously weren't that in September until they made the quarterback change.
Yeah, but and I have no qualms about that. They didn't win their conference. They didn't even make the conference game. And yeah, they might have been playing the best football, but you know, it's hey, I think you gotta, you know, you can't win a championship in September and October, but you can certainly lose one.
Absolutely. I mean, look at Oklahoma. I mean, they played league teams on their three game out of conference slate between playing Houston, you know, Tom Herman's Houston Cougars, and playing Ohio State, and they lost to Ohio State at home. I mean, you know, and I look at a lot of these losses. I look at Washington's loss. They're the only team with they're that one loss team that lost at home. You know, they lost to a good USC team, but they lost at home versus Michigan going to Iowa and Ohio State, or Ohio State, you know, going to Penn State and losing that game. I mean, I think that you got to hold serve at home because of how much of a slant there is in the favor of the home team in college football, especially when you put two premier players like, you know, like an Oklahoma Sooners and the Ohio State Buckeyes on the same field.
All right, Jeff Rich from SportsBylineUSA.com is with us. All right, let's go ahead and take a look at the two games. Let's first, since we've been talking about it, Clemson and Ohio State. Clemson's actually a 3-point underdog in this case.
Maybe they should be. You know, they've had some scares. They had a scare against NC State. I don't think that they looked particularly awesome against Virginia Tech. I was hoping that they'd play North Carolina. I thought that would have been a better game for the ACC championship. But 17-13 over Auburn versus what, you know, what Ohio State did. You know, granted, this is 4 months ago that we're talking about, but versus what Ohio State did in Norman. You know, I've been questionable about Ohio State down the stretch. I think that their passing game has been suspect. Obviously, a big drop off going from Ezekiel Elliott to Mike Weber and Curtis Samuel as your, you know, 1A feature backs. I wonder about Ohio State. I just trust their defense a lot, and I think that they'll be able to contain Watson. And I think it's going to be an interesting game, but. That's a great matchup on the outside that you have between, you know, either Malik Hooker or Gerrion Conley, you know, checking Mike Williams and some of the threats that Clemson has in their running game or in their passing game. I think it's going to come down to, can Clemson run the ball against Ohio State's front seven? If they can stay on the field, you know, especially on third down, they gotta be playing not in front of the chains, but they got to be third and four, third and five if they're going to stay on the field. You give Ohio State too many opportunities, they're going to take advantage. And that's exactly what we saw against Michigan, who outplayed them for about 3.5 quarters.
All right. Now let's take a look at the other game. You know, Washington, Alabama in the Peach Bowl. And Alabama right now is a 15-point favorite over Washington.
It's hard to make a case for Washington. I mean, I don't want to disrespect them because they are – you know what, a 12-1 football team. Chris Peterson is no stranger to the big games. It's just there's a lot of talent on the Alabama side of the ball. I think that, you know, we've kind of penciled Alabama in for Tampa already. You know, Washington could get that, you know, nobody believed in us card going. And, you know, if they get out in front early, you know, it could be anybody's game. But with what Alabama could do, you know, putting the pressure on Browning, I just don't think that there are a lot of outs once that pass rush gets going. And, you know, we've certainly seen it from Alabama all year long. You know, Alabama's not, you know, everybody's calling this playoff the Alabama Invitational. I don't think that it's exactly that, but I have a hard time seeing Washington really putting up a game against them, despite what they did to Colorado in the Pac-12 championship.
Well, is it also possibly a case where Alabama is as strong as they've always been in the SEC? Maybe this year had a little bit of a drop-off?
Well, I think that the level of competition in the SEC has certainly dropped off. I don't know that you could really fault Alabama for it, but you know, you got that young quarterback that wasn't really on the radar, despite you know the fact that he is a starting quarterback for Alabama as we began the season. But he's just been something special, and you know they've got 4- and 5-star players across the offense and defense there. I mean, I would expect that you know Nick Saban's teams don't sit down and play down to their level of competition on the big stage. You know that. That Sugar Bowl against Utah, you know, there are times that they didn't play to the best of the, you know, they didn't play their best game, but it wasn't on the biggest stage with the championship at stake. I think that Alabama's going to show up and, you know, 15 sounds about right. I don't see this being a 52-6 game like they played against USC, but I don't really see Washington being in this game in the fourth quarter.
All right, so let's quickly look at two, I guess we'd call them almost consolation games. First off, the Rose Bowl, USC and Penn State. What are your thoughts on that game?
I don't think that there's a hotter team outside the playoff than USC, but Penn State's shown me some things. You know, I thought that Ohio State win was a fluke, you know, especially when they struggled out of the gate against Michigan State in their regular season finale. You know, and then the way that they struggled against Wisconsin. I mean, a lot of people thought that Wisconsin was the better team going into that game, and the first half certainly did a lot to support that. But the way that McSorley played in the second half, the way that Barkley runs the football, I mean, if you can get that running game going with Penn State, you set McSorley up to do good things. That said, I think that USC is just too hot. Unless they cool down in this period between the end of the regular season and you know, and their bowl game, which is a big game. It's in their backyard. Penn State's been in this Rose Bowl a few times. This is the first time without Joe Paterno, obviously.
Yeah,
I don't see it going great for Penn State. I think that this could be a close game early, but I see USC imposing their will and running away with it in the second half, as they tend to do against the Big Ten teams in that Rose Bowl.
Yeah, and the last time USC was in the Rose Bowl, they faced Penn State.
Yeah, would that have been, 2008, something
yep,
like that?
Exactly, yeah. And, all right, and then very, very quickly, Oklahoma-Auburn.
Oklahoma-Auburn, you know, I just haven't seen a lot to make me really believe in Auburn. What's their big win? Is that 10-7 win at Georgia? I mean, I just, the Gus Malzahn honeymoon is kind of over there. I think that Stoops is facing a lot of controversy with this Joe Mixon video coming out this week, but I think that Oklahoma is just the better team. I thought we saw it throughout their Big 12 schedule. We don't really respect a lot of their opponents in the Big 12, but I think that they make a statement in New Orleans against the Auburn Tigers.
Jeff Rich from Phoenix, Arizona, we appreciate your contribution here on the Sports Report, and a very happy new year to you and Jan and all of your family there in Phoenix. You have a great new year, Jeff. Thanks for coming on, and I want everybody to listen to Jeff if they've got a chance on Sunday morning on the Sports Byline USA Network at sportsbyline.com. He's on 8 to 10 Pacific time on Sunday morning. That is 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern time on Sunday. There'll be a lot to talk about. So, Jeff, thanks very much. And you have a great day.
Thank you, guys. Have a great 2017.
And we want to thank you for listening to this week's edition of the Sports Report, brought to you by sportsaudio.net. We do it every week, so come back next week. I want to thank our guests on the show from our interview back in 1998, Bart Starr. Interview from a couple years ago, Steve, with Dick Butkus. Also, Jeff Rich from the Sports Byline USA Radio Network. For Steve Leventhal, I'm Packer Dave saying, have a great new year. Take care. See you next week. Have a good one. Bye now.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Keep your feet in the ground and keep reaching for the stars.
That's right, tough guy.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Get some bears, scumbag.
Goodbye.
Tell you what, Dipstick, you can just come on down here and smooch my big old white butt.
pucker up, Buttercup.
Yeah, I hear you, Fruitcake.
Oh, it's hopeless. I ought to club them and eat their bones.
Goodbye.
Now you ladies, carry on.
Excellent.
See you later, pal. I'm going home.
Wait a minute.
Well, I'm glad that's over. Now it's over.
Good night, ladies.
Good night, sir.
Let's get out of here.
The Year in Sports, a presentation of CRLRadio.com. I'm Bob Terrell. Join us in 1995 on The Year in Sports. A good year for the Cowboys in 95. Once again, the NFC champions with a 15-4 record. In Super Bowl 30 following the season, the MVP award went to the Cowboys' Larry Brown. It was Dallas over the Steelers in the end, 27-17. The Houston Rockets found their way back into NBA championship play, this time taking on the Orlando Magic. This matchup put two centers on center stage, Shaquille O'Neal of the Magic and Hakeem Olajuwon of the Rockets. In the end, it was the Rockets winning out in overtime. The 1995 World Series matched the Atlanta Braves against the Cleveland Indians. The Braves won in six games, capturing their third World Championship in franchise history. In Stanley Cup play in 1995, the New Jersey Devils swept the Detroit Red Wings in a four-game sweep to take the title. I'm Bob Terrell. Thanks for joining us in 1995 on The Year in Sports, a presentation of CRLRadio.com.
For many of us, the holidays include trips to see family and friends in other towns. I'm Danny Lipford with tips for today's homeowner. Stay tuned and we'll talk about keeping your home secure while you're gone right after this.
Concerned about grout staining? Worry no more. New Fusion Pro Single Component Grout from Custom Building Products is a revolutionary new grout with unsurpassed stain resistance built into the formulation. It resists common household stains, and it never needs to be sealed like standard grout. And unlike other stain-resistant grouts on the market, such as epoxy or urethane, Fusion Pro is easy to work with and clean. So no matter if you're tiling yourself or hiring a professional, ask for Fusion Pro Grout for a beautiful, long-lasting tile installation.
When you leave home, don't advertise to thieves that you're away. Burglars look for dark houses that stay that way, so use timers to make it look like you're at home. If you can, use several timers and program them to turn lights and radios on and off in different rooms at different times. Leave a car parked in the driveway and ask a neighbor to gather all your mail and newspapers or have delivery of them stopped altogether. If you use online networking sites like Facebook or Twitter, be careful that your posts don't tell the world that your house is vacant, and don't share too much information on your answering machine with a message like, "Hi, the Wilsons aren't home this weekend." Otherwise, your house might give you away while you're away. I'm Danny Lipford with tips for today's homeowner.